your plan B? Is what you're doing taking you toward or away from your goals? Are you fulfilled? You can start over. The past is the past. This is a revolution of hope. We provide a way for extra income, part or full-time, with a mission and vision of hope designed to inspire. This is the greatest movement on earth. Make a commitment to yourself and ask, what do you want your life to be like? Join us in our revolution of hope. Go to tellmeplanb.com or call 803-431-0775.
Right now, I'm standing in a hole, a 300-foot deep hole to be exact. But even though I'm down here, I'm still connected to the entire job site because I have the new Sprint Direct Connect with apps like Workforce Locator that lets me know my foreman, Mike, is...
Yeah, I'm here.
And I have three times the coverage, so I know that my most important delivery...
Just arrived.
And as part of the fastest push-to-talk, I can assemble my team the moment I need them. Guys?
On our way.
So now I can focus on turning this hole into a hotel.
Upgrade to the new Dunn. The new Sprint Direct Connect with three times the coverage and access to the fastest push-to-talk experience nationwide. Now when you buy one Motorola Admiral Rugged smartphone for $49.99, you'll get one free. To upgrade, call 800-SPRINT-1 or visit a Sprint store near you. Offer ends 1-10-13. Offer available to corporate liable accounts. Excludes taxes. Two-year agreement. $36 activation. Up to $350 early termination fee for devices. Fastest claim based on initial setup time for push-to-talk calls originating in Nextel or Sprint-owned 3G coverage. Coverage claim based on comparison of Nextel National Network square miles to Sprint National Network inclusive of roaming. Restrictions apply. See store.
And now, the show that covers politics from all angles. Inside Politics with David Califf.
And Inside Politics with Caleb, the show that covers the issues that affect you. I hope everybody's having a great Monday, and the weekend is over. That's right, Saturday and Sundays. It's time to get back to work. And we got a great show this Monday evening show. Off in the meeting to progress, renewable energy closing in on natural gas, largest source of electricity. Why? And that's not because of what we're doing in the United States, but that's because of what outside of the United States have been doing. Imagine if we would tap into that, tap into our alternative renewable energy sources, then it wouldn't be closing in on number two, be closing in on number one. But we've got a great show lined up for you this evening and tonight. I want to start off the show with the attacks on the unemployed, and we continue. And this isn't a new narrative. What we've continued to hear from politicians with this one particular ideological view. I don't have to tell you who they are. You know who they are. And these politicians continue to attack and demonize people who are unemployed and use the unemployment insurance program. The comments, you've heard the labels. Oh, they're lazy. They're dependent on the unemployment insurance company. They're not looking for a job. They're continuing to leech off the government unemployment insurance program. Even though number one, it's not a long term program; it's short term. Number two, it's a couple hundred dollars at the most in most states a week. Are going to the Bahamas with that? But yet, you have politicians, particularly in the GOP, continue to make these comments, both in Washington and at a state level. And speaking of at a state level. North Carolina, the governor of North Carolina and the legislature, along with his cronies in the state house, have passed the most drastic cuts to the unemployment insurance program. This is even though North Carolina has the fifth highest unemployment rate in the nation, has over 400,000 North Carolinians that rely on the unemployment insurance system. And what did this governor of North Carolina do? Well, they cut the unemployment, some of the most biggest cuts in history here in the United States. They cut the maximum benefit that you can get unemployment in the state of North Carolina from $535 to $350. That's almost a $200 a week cut. And the cuts are so bad that North Carolina has been taken out of the federal insurance program, no longer able to receive the federal dollars from the federal unemployment insurance program. That's pretty bad. And how these cuts measure up over the next 5 years, the cost to the state of North Carolina, the unemployed, over $3 billion. And add cost to employers who would now have to pay more because the federal government won't be providing dollars to help with the state funds for the unemployment insurance program. So these same politicians passing zero jobs bills but worried about abortion. Not only that, they if they continue to try to talk about the unemployment rate, what's going on in terms of jobs, but yet attacking the program that helps the unemployed the most. Why they're down on their feet. Why they're down, this program helps them pick them up off their feet, not kick them down. And that's what this governor in North Carolina is doing, along with his cronies in North Carolina. Tonight to discuss this topic is Mr. Bill Atkins, Democratic strategist and congressional candidate in the state of Kentucky. And hello, Bill. Thanks for joining us live on Inside Politics.
Thanks for having me on this, so many important subjects that you and I discussed. And what we have here is the Republican right-wing war on reality, war on thinking that translates into a war on the poor. The Republicans are continuing to play to a more and more narrow and shrinking base. And you know, not reacting to it. As you know, there's the Moral Monday marches in North Carolina. The people showing up and taking on the legislation there. But it's going to cost them overall. But yesterday, 70,000 North Carolinians lost their unemployment benefit. Then over here, another 170,000 will lose their state benefits. Because not only have they cut benefits, they disqualified themselves from the Emergency Unemployment Compensation Program at $700 million in a given year. Add that to their refusal to adopt a Medicaid expansion. That cost them another $1 billion a year. The math doesn't add up, yet they continue to make these mistakes. And where, as you said, their fifth highest unemployment in the nation, 8.8%, is going to hit the economy of North Carolina really hard. And it is not a positive. It's all negative all the time.
Instead of trying to pass bills that tries to get jobs created, we're building roads and bridges and infrastructure in North Carolina or other job programs that they could look into. Instead, they passed these draconian cuts to the unemployment insurance program in the state of North Carolina that's so bad that they no longer qualify for the federal insurance program. That's pretty bad.
Absolutely. It's just contrary to the Christian values they claim to have. And ultimately, you know, it's not just North Carolina, but North Carolina's in the news right now. You look at Texas; they refuse to expand Medicaid, and with this abortion issue that Wendy Davis stifled the other night, that's what they're doing. You had Bobby Jindal in Louisiana; he tried to end income taxes and place a large sales tax burden that would hit low-income individuals disproportionately. And in Kansas, they actually did that. And now we have this in North Carolina. This makes no sense. It's ideology. It's a recycling of 19th century social values, a very simplistic application of those social values. And what it comes down to is apparently the GOP is so mad against the 47% that McConnell, they're going to make it pay.
And they'll do anything to pass laws that override federal law, or like in the case of anti-abortion bills that are against the Constitution. In the case of these particular cuts, they defied federal law. And it's federal law that they violated a provision of the Federal Unemployment Insurance Program that you cannot cut the level of weekly benefit payments, particularly when you're receiving federal money. And they knew this, and they defied federal law. And now because of that, as you mentioned, hundreds of thousands of North Carolinians who are looking for a job, not a handout, they're looking for a job, and they're the ones being punished because this North Carolina governor, along with his cronies in the state house in North Carolina, voted for something that defied federal law.
Well, the average unemployment benefit in North Carolina is $299 a week, okay? That's as soon as a week month. I challenge anyone to budget that amount. less than $1,200 for rent, car payment, insurance, food, utilities, clothing, medical care out the window. It's unbelievable. You're right. It's draconian. And this is they're welcoming back at some point, the height of this manufacturing, the misery of the height of the Great Depression. But the situation, they've got all the stress added with the financial difficulties. The depression is with no foreseeable improvement in their future. Imagine what it's doing to children. And people always forget about, you may not be paying unemployment to that adult, but that adult's stress is translated without words to a child.
Yeah, the
children
whole
are not immune, and they can feel that stress. It is so counterproductive. This is why we've got to take these state houses back from these malicious and malignant that is the Republican Party, and particularly the Tea Party today.
It's going to hurt the families as well, and these are the same people that try to say that they're about family morals and family values. They're destroying households. The number one reason for divorces is economic hardships, and this only adds to economic hardships. And these same people that talk about family values and traditional marriage, these cuts don't help that at all. And the maximum that you can get is $535 if you qualify based on how much you made at your job that you were at before. $535 the maximum, as you mentioned, $299 the average. And it was cut to $350 that you can get if you qualify for that. That's a almost $100 cut per week.
That's taken direct from North Carolina's economy. Imagine, just think about, for instance, the food stamp bill, the SNAP program. The Republicans are holding up the farm bill that expired last September because of the supplemental nutrition funding, okay? But for every dollar in food stamps put out there, the locals realize $1.70. That's the direct stimulation of the economy. They think lower labor costs will encourage job growth. Let's do the math there. If the labor's not being paid as much, labor is not buying as much. It's going to lower overall spending. It's a direct frontal assault on those small businesses that these people claim to revere.
They're
going to cause greater unemployment, greater misery, failing businesses. It's amazing. And again, $700 million in federal aid taken out of North Carolina on this unemployment issue alone because they're disqualified from the Emergency Unemployment Compensation Program. That requires a minimum level of average weekly benefit. In North Carolina,
And that, I think that was done on purpose. They knew the federal funds would be taken out, and now almost close to $1 trillion. And this whole notion that one of the reasoning that they some of the politicians in North Carolina are saying that they've done this, did this, is to try to get to work. I mean, this is a ludicrous, insane way of thinking, but it doesn't surprise me from today's GOP that you get back to work by cutting their unemployment benefits. And this is based on no sound study. Studies show that people in the unemployment insurance program actually work harder to because they know there's a deadline of when those benefits are going to run out. So they're trying their hardest to find a job before they know those unemployment benefits may run out.
Absolutely. People who are drawing these benefits are not living a life of leisure. They don't take vacations. They have no discretionary income, really. And the changes that North Carolina is imposing upon itself through these draconian measures imposed by McCrory and his legislature, it's going to take $1.6 billion in total benefit cuts. And it's going to cost employers more in 2017, $3.6 billion. Imagine $3.6 billion out of the state's economy. Imagine proportionally what it might do to the nation if it were imposed across the nation. These people, with friends like these, we don't need enemies. And I wonder, I hate to say this, but I wonder if they're not doing this so to blunt the economic progress in the last few years for political purposes.
Well, when it comes to the economy, and you make a great point, when it comes to the economy, nobody is hurting the economy, sabotaging the economy. You can take any of our opponents or foreign opponents, any of our so-called adversaries in other countries, nobody's hurting the economy more than from within, and that's today's Republican Party.
Absolutely. And these benefits kept 2.3 million Americans out of poverty in 2011 alone, but you're absolutely right. Nobody's hurting the economy more than these policies, but with my Republicans, simplistic, simple-minded economics. They have no clue. It's a war on, as I said, a war on reality as a result, a war on thinking that they seem to have, but it has real-world result in increasing the misery of people who are in need right now. They need income. They need that hand up, as you said. They need the basic services, and they're turning down unemployment benefits and medical care provided by the federal government out of some perverted moral sense. It really and truly is immoral.
And it creates a ripple effect, down the line. I mean, from the person who's getting the cuts, they could see, if they're not getting that benefit every week and they're seeing their benefits slash and the duration of it slash, that could lead to them not being able to pay that mortgage payment, not being able to make that car payment, not being able to pay their bills. That hurts the economy, more foreclosures, more cars being repossessed, more credit delinquencies. That has a ripple effect on the economy. Then, as you mentioned, the businesses having to pay more from their end, that's less money. And then less money going into the economy. Because the money that these individuals are getting under the unemployment insurance program, it all goes back into the economy. They're not saving it in a bank because they have to spend whatever they get from this program because that's the only economic means that they're getting while they're unemployed.
Imagine the social cost of all these people that have lost their income. They, along with that loss of income, they've lost their benefits, including medical benefits. They're starting to tap their retirement accounts at big cost to them, both in diminished retirement account and the taxes associated with it. Some people have obligations like paying child support that they can't meet. Therefore, that rolls downhill to those children and the discord. I can guarantee you the discord between the parents when someone doesn't pay their child support, and that's prosecutable in about every state, and someone can end up in prison. It is such a web of disaster that these people are building.
In I'm tired of the former Senator John Kyle of Arizona and so many of these politicians and like the governor of North Carolina labeling people that are in the unemployment insurance program as lazy. No, they're not. These are people that worked for a long duration of time to be even able to qualify for unemployment insurance benefits. It means they worked a certain amount of time, so they were working hard. Many times, we all know about the economic collapse and the recession. These are people that through no fault of their own, either, let's say, their job moved to another state, downsized, closed, outsourced, so many different reasons beyond the American workers, beyond what they could do, it was outside influences, and for politicians to label, demonize, and have the nerve to call these people lazy, I think it's wrong, inaccurate, and pretty slimy.
Well, they spread the lie that these people are lazy and not looking for jobs because they're getting such a cushy $2.99 a week. Truly, people who are on unemployment, they receive that amount on condition they seek employment. They're out there diligently looking for jobs. They're looking for a living wage, certainly, but they're looking for jobs that support them and their families. And they're not finding them. Particularly the state that's fifth in the nation and unemployment, 8.8%. The equation is flawed, amazingly flawed, and yet they're still trying to sell the idea, as you said, these people are lazy. They're enjoying the benefits All the rest of us who are working are supporting them, and they shouldn't be able to get away for getting something for nothing. But that's not the case. What they are is they're victims of the same failed policies that people like McCrory promote as a solution. They cause the problem. They want to keep doing the same thing over and over. And do you expect a result? Because I do not. McCrory's insane.
And the whole notion about dependency and laziness, this is not a long-term program. In North Carolina, it's now 5 months, the longest you can get it. But, I mean, this is a program that you're not going to go past a certain amount of time, 6, 7, 8, 9 months at the most. But this is not some program where you're going to be on for 10, 15, 20 years. So I'm tired of them lying to the American people.
Absolutely. I mean, the federal government extended unemployment benefits at a time of financial crisis that we're just now coming out of. And actions like McCrory's push us back into it because it's going to cost jobs and businesses in North Carolina. North Carolina was once a very successful state. They had the research triangle around Charlotte. They were very successful, and it's a great place to visit, too. I just visited the Outer Banks myself about a month ago. But the atmosphere, the poison that these people are selling to only a few, because they're using this, they're using these last bit of ammunition they have, these tried and true issues, and they're really evaporating. And when people start realizing the damage that they are doing, I think that the Republican Party is well in danger of becoming the right there in that best bin of history.
And I think this is a great example of that. And, you know, this program helps millions of Americans get back on their feet. And there's no rationale for cutting the unemployment insurance program the way that North Carolina did and the way these politicians continue to want to cut these programs. And then cutting the length to 5 months. Now, that's atrocious. And I think, you know, for all of our listeners out there, know that it can take amount of 5 months. I mean, sometimes it can take a month or two before employers even finish the process of reviewing all the applications.
Absolutely, it's truly sad. I don't know how I can express any more than we, you and I, have discussed this. I mean, look at the bare situation. I know it seems to change the subject, but not of refusing the Medicaid expansion. You and I have discussed this before. That brings jobs into a state, that increases the number of positions within the industry. It provides medical care to people at a lesser cost, and overall it controls costs of the industry, a benefit across the board. This is one more example of what they're doing, the Republicans are doing, to blunt the economic progress we've made. We've got to turn this around. This this is bare subsistence, $2.99 a week.
And
how many people is that to cover? You've got a $24,000 poverty level for a family of four. $2.99 a week is below minimum wage. And minimum wage is $12.56 a month, about $14,000 a year, $14.5. I mean, it's just, they're wanting people to live on half what the poverty level is and not give any other benefits to them either.
And there's more jobs
that are necessary to survive.
And there's more jobs than job seekers right now. We've gotten improvements since the economy under George Bush and GOP policies, as you mentioned. But for every job opening, there's three job seekers for every job. For every job, there's three people for every one person. I mean, 3-to-1. That's a 3-to-1 ratio. So you have so many people that are looking for jobs, but the jobs are lower than the amount of people that are searching for jobs.
Right. But if you listen to those people that promote Republican candidates, like the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, okay, this is where they're inconsistent and contradictory in their assertions. I just saw that the U.S. Chamber had a tweet yesterday. There are 3.7 million jobs for which they can't fill because workers are not skilled. They are not trained for them. So basically, they're claiming that 2.7 7 million jobs out there. They can't put someone in because they don't have the ability to do it. Now, the Republican Party is defunding education. They're doubling the student loan rates, unless something's changed in the last 12 hours, doubled today. They've sequestration has ended largely. The cost of college and or vocational school has become prohibitive, and the U.S. Chamber claims we have 0.7 million jobs available. People can't do it because they don't have the education and training to do it. Now, that's a catch-22.
This is bad all the way around. There's no good to it. It's purely ideological. It's purely an attack on the American people, the American worker. It hurts the people who are applying for unemployment, their families, their children. It hurts employers who are going to have to pay more into the unemployment insurance program. It hurts the economy, both the local small businesses in North Carolina and the national economy as well. It hurts America all the way around, whether it's the business sector, small and large, whether it's children, families, whether it's or if you're single. It hurts the housing industry because there's going to be foreclosures. It hurts the car industry, automobile industry. It hurts the banking industry. It hurts everybody. So this, I don't know what the reasoning from this governor of North Carolina is, but whatever his reasoning is, it's not based on what's best for the state of North Carolina or best for the United States. It's only best to fit his radical ideological views that are wrong.
And there's another point. It's one-dimensional. They cannot see the depth and the whole picture. It's got depth, but they only see the surface, a one-dimensional view of what's going on, and they apply one-dimensional thinking to it. And that is definitely a flawed application of analysis. There's so much, all these factors that you and I have spoken about, education, medical care, the benefit of unemployment, the benefits to the economy, the cost to the employer. I think $42 per worker is what businesses will have to pay in North Carolina just to maintain the benefits there are. Keep in mind, too, the cost of Obamacare. If they don't have the Medicaid expansion, guess what? There's tax for it. You still have to pay for it in other states. It's one-dimensional thinking. It is no way to go through life.
Paid not to do one-dimensional thinking. These politicians, the state house, governorship, we're paying them. We're their boss. We, the taxpayer, we're paying their salaries. And they're supposed to be looking at things from different angles, how it hurts the state, their citizens from different angles. That's what their job is. That's what they're paid for. I mean, if we can see it, and we're doing this for free right here on this show tonight, I think it's shameful, degrading, and this governor shouldn't even come out of his mansion, because we can see it on one segment of a radio show, and they can't see it, and they're getting paid by the taxpayer to do it. And I think everyone in North Carolina should be upset at this governor in North Carolina, and everyone in this country should be mad at politicians in Washington continue to attack the unemployed, particularly at a time when we're getting back on track from a recession. But Bill, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for breaking down this topic. As always, it's been a pleasure.
Thanks for having me, David. I mean, these issues are important, and you know, like you said, we, and it does not appear that the people in North Carolina, the pleasure is. And I hope somebody out there is listening and don't know what we're talking about.
Oh, I hope so, but I won't hope for that governor in the mansion in North Carolina.
I won't either. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks. We're about to go into a commercial break. You're listening to Inside Politics with David Califf. We'll be right back after this commercial break.
And now,
right now, now, I'm standing in a hole. A 300-foot deep hole, to be exact. But even though I'm down here, I'm still connected to the entire job site. Because I have the new Sprint Direct Connect with apps like Workforce Locator. It lets me know my foreman, Mike, is...
Yeah, I'm here.
And I have three times the coverage, so I know that my most important delivery...
Just arrived.
And as part of the fastest push-to-talk, I can assemble my team the moment I need them. Guys?
On our way.
So now I can focus on turning this hole into a hotel.
Upgrade to the new Dunn. The new Sprint Direct Connect with three times the coverage and access to the fastest push-to-talk experience nationwide. Now when you buy one Motorola Admiral Rugged smartphone for $49.99, you'll get one free. To upgrade, call 800-SPRINT-1 or visit a Sprint store near you. Offer ends 1/10/13. Offer available to corporate liable accounts. Excludes taxes. Two-year agreement. $36 activation. Up to $350 early termination fee per devices. Fastest claim based on initial setup time for push-to-talk calls originating in Nextel or Sprint-owned 3G coverage. Coverage claim based on comparison of Nextel National Network square miles to Sprint National Network inclusive of roaming. Restrictions apply. See store.
What's your plan B? Is what you're doing taking you toward or away from your goals? Are you fulfilled? You can start over. The past is the past. This is a revolution of hope. We provide a way for extra income part or full-time with a mission and vision of hope designed to inspire. This is the greatest movement on earth. Make a commitment to yourself and ask, what do you want your life to be like? Join us in our revolution of hope. Go to tellmeplanb.com or call 803-431-0775.
And you're listening to Inside Politics with David Caleb, the show that covers the issues that affect you. And I hope everybody's having a great Monday. Before we get back into tonight's Monday edition, July 1st, today we reached a deadline and Congress did not act to stop student loan interest rates from doubling from 3% to 6%, which could cost college student loan borrowers up to $1,000 a year. And these interest rates from doubling. And this is another example, and we talked about this on yesterday's show, of who's fighting for you and who's not. The Democrats fought to stop these student loan interest rates from doubling, including proposing a plan to close up tax loopholes for the oil corporations, just to name a few, to pay for it. The GOP said, no, how dare we close tax loopholes and make these corporations pay taxes? Even though they're making billions of dollars.
Wow.
Yeah, we can. We can't do that. No. How dare we make them pay
$4 a gallon for gas, and we can't ask them to pay their share?
Yeah, why they make record profits. And this is an example on one side, politicians that don't want to close tax loopholes for oil corporations. On the other side, people who do want to close the tax loopholes so you, your sons, daughters, or yourself won't have to pay double for your student loan interest rates. Couldn't be clearer on who's fighting for you on one side and who isn't. You decide. But tonight it's all about the workers fighting back. You got the fast food workers that we talked about on this show, Walmart workers, restaurant employees, just to name a few. Well, the latest example is our transit workers. The BART workers, Bay Area Transit System, over 2,400 employees went on strike today. And their list of demands, well, they've been on a five-year pay freeze for the last 5 years with no raise, and they want to have their cost of living adjusted. They want a 5% raise for the next 3 years to cover for that 5 years of having no raises while cost of living has gone up. And they don't agree with BART, who want them to pay more into their pensions and more into their health care. All this, they have the audacity to want them to pay more after a five-year pay freeze. Go figure. And this is another example. These employees at these transit workers are fighting hard, and they're standing steady, and we're saying, no, we're going to fight for what we believe in. And as we talked about previously on this show, with Walmart strikes, fast food worker strikes, just to name a few, that this is causing a chain reaction. Workers in all industries, all walks of life, are sick and tired of being pushed around, and they want to fight. They're not fighting for millions of dollars or gold carrots. No, what they're fighting for is a living wage and to be treated with dignity. That's what they're fighting for. And joining us tonight is Mr. Stuart Acuff, union organizer and activist, and a regular contributor to the show. And hello, Stuart. Thanks for joining us live on Inside Politics.
Hey, David. It's great to be with you. And you're totally right about more and more workers beginning to fight back. You know, if I think about the BART strike in Northern California in the Bay Area, San Francisco, Oakland, Berkeley, and San Jose and surrounding area. You know, I'm reminded of how the teachers struck in Chicago, and how everybody assumed that Mayor Rahm Emanuel, who had such a reputation as a tough guy, would be able to beat him down, and how the parents and the community stood behind him, and they won their strike. And I think we'll find in the Bay Area, I know we'll find in the Bay Area, the solidarity of our workers and the solidarity of other workers, union and non-union, in the Bay Area will help them win their strike. I mean, it is a sign of, you know, we've had 35 years of stagnant wages, actually 25 years of stagnant wages, and the last 10 or 15 wages have actually been declining. We saw Wall Street burn up our pension funds in the Wall Street meltdown of 2007, 2008, 2009, and we're seeing healthcare costs continuing to climb because Obamacare hasn't fully taken effect yet, and employers wanting to push more and more and more of all this on workers and impoverish more and more workers, impoverish their families more and more and more, squeeze and shrink the middle class to the point where we're playing a Russian roulette with the goose that laid the golden egg in the American economy, which is the broad deep middle class that has allowed corporations to do very well in this country, broad deep middle class that has raised living standards for everybody in this country. So it's all around us, you know. These guys who are so happy to see the folks at Wall Street destroy the economy and walk away with the largest bonuses in history, refuse to lift a finger when student loans go from 3% to 6%. I mean, it's outrageous.
It definitely is unconscionable, and you know, these workers have not had a raise in 5 years, much like many American workers across the country. 5 years from BART officials, the transit system, was a 2% annual raise over the next 4 years. But it's pretty sneaky and slimy the way they did it. It's not automatic. It's contingent on some different factors, including ridership increases, sales tax revenues, how the rail system does in terms of how many riders. So, and also, you're going to get this. You're going to get a kick out of this. Reductions in the number of employees under the Family Medical Leave Act.
What BART management is saying is, if we fail to do a good job managing this system, then you're the ones who are going to take the loss for it. Nobody else. If we fail to get the ridership up, if we fail to increase the revenue stream, then it's the driver drivers and the mechanics and the cleaners and the operators who are going to pay the cost of their failure. Nobody in management is saying, if we fail, you know, I'm going to take pay cuts. What you just mentioned as the contingency factors, those are classic employer, those classic employer duties. And so instead of saying, if you don't do a good job, we're going to cut your pay, they're saying, we don't, as management, do a good job, we're going to cut your pay. And it's outrageous. It's unbelievable to me that they would have the audacity to say, you will pay if we're not able to perform our duties well and up to standard.
And they want employees to pay more into the pension system and pay over $92 a month for their health care. So they want to give a 2% raise after 5 years of no raises, and they're not even automatic raises. They're based on their really performance on how the rail system does. And then on top of that, they have to pay more for their health care. And I've seen this little plan across some states, including South Carolina, where they give a 1% or 2% raise to their state employees, but at the same time, they raise 1% or 2% raise, but then they raise the cost into the health care and pension. So it's really not a raise, much like they're trying to do here with the BART system.
No, it's a shell thing. And in fact, the danger here is that percentage raises are cumulative. So every time you get a percentage raise, the wage scale goes up, not just that year, but forever. And when they stagnate the wage scale and then ask you to pay more for your health care and your insurance, you're getting a double whammy. And that's exactly what they're doing in the Bay Area. That's exactly what BART's doing.
Oh, yeah, and this whole notion that unions are unreasonable, these union thugs, and unions never work with the employer, they only try to bankrupt the workplace or business, not true at all. And the perfect example is right here, the transit union workers here at this rail system. They made $100 million in concessions 4 years ago to help the rail system when it was in trouble during the recession, during economic collapse under Bush. Now, four or five years later, the rail system in San Francisco is doing much better. It has a surplus. And the union saying now, hey, we helped you when you were going through rough times. We made the sacrifices, over $100 million in concessions. Now that you're doing well, the economy is rebounding, you have a surplus, now we should share some of those good fortunes because we helped with concessions.
Well, absolutely. I mean, we've all seen this industry after industry. I mean, it's been part of what we saw in the airline industry in the 80s when the airline industry went through deregulation and workers made concessions to keep their airlines afloat. And that was the very reason for the Eastern strike. Yeah. We see them do what rich people do, which is screw everybody else and not reciprocate and not remember and not play fair at the bargaining table. And those workers will never get back 5 years of flat wages, David. You know that. I know that. They'll never get that back. That's a 15%, but 5 times, for, 3%. It's a 10 to 15% wage increase they gave up. And as cost of living goes up, particularly in the Bay Area, that's not just stagnant wages, that's declining wages. And they'll never make that back up. And they're not trying to. They're just trying to get back on track.
Yeah, just catch up with cost of living.
Right. Get back on track with cost of living and have their wages track their productivity and again, the cost of living. And we can't forget, and I know I repeat this too much, people get tired of hearing me say it, but our pensions were burnt up in the Wall Street collapse of 2007, 2008, 2009, when our pensions were invested in those banks, in those mortgage banks, in those financial institutions. And when they crashed because of sloppy, reckless, uninformed, unregulated business practices, they destroyed millions of workers' pensions. And now they turn around, and not just in this country, all over this country, but also all over Europe, they're asking us to pay for their mistakes while they get bonuses. it's beyond absurd. It's beyond absurd, and it boggles my mind every time an employer does this.
And then they blame unions.
Our little money, we trust you for our retirement. You blow that money away into dust. And then you say that we have to pick up for it. It's ridiculous. And
what makes this strike such huge news is this is a major work stoppage, a strike of over 1,000 or more workers, which has really, and I know you can attest to this, has hit record lows. Just to give our listeners some context, in 1970, there were 400 strikes of over 1,000 workers. And turned the clock forward to 2012. It went from 400 in 1970 to just 19 last year.
Right. Well, things have happened. One is labor law three things have happened. One is we've had a major transfer of wealth and power from working people in the middle class to the very rich. And whether you measure the very rich as the top 10% or the top 7% or the top 3% or the top 1%, those folks are raking in all of the increases in wealth in this country. The increases in wealth created by increases in productivity, increases in wealth are created by the economy slowly coming back. They're the only ones getting anything out of that. And so that's one thing. Major transfers of wealth from the working people in the middle class to the 1%, however you want to call it, top layer. The second thing is that we've lost a lot of the most powerful unionized industries, which were manufacturing, and that a lot of that is gone. A lot of the steel industry is gone. A lot of other heavy industry is gone. And we almost lost the automobile industry. If you can imagine this, we almost had an America without a homegrown automobile industry. That was only saved by President Obama and the United Auto Workers. They went to bargain hard, and the president went to push out a
continue to deny the success to this day.
The first thing that's happened is that labor law has changed dramatically since 1970, and we've lost the right to strike without fear of losing our jobs. And so now, every time you go on strike knowing that you might never get the job back. And so unions have been, over time, more strategic about how they pressure employers for fair negotiations when employers aren't willing to play fair and with.
It's definitely unfair advantages for employers now. And
right, exactly.
And you know, these BART employees have a history of going on strike and winning. Back in 1997, they went on strike for 6 days. They rejected management's offer of a 3% annual raise over 3 years. And unions also sought to eliminate a two-tier wage system that pays new employees less than veteran workers for the same job. And a strike resulted in a four-year contract with a 7% raise and a one-time payment of $3,000 to all employees in lieu of a raise the first year. So there's history of these victories, and I think that's what these workers are looking at. We have history on our side.
The area is a strong union area. It's very, very strong, and workers in the Bay Area are reminded of the 1934 general strike in San Francisco when the longshoremen went on strike, and everybody else went on a sympathy strike with them. And they brought the city to its knees, and they won, and they created a union city. And we see what that's done. That's one of the most prosperous cities in America. It's one of the most wonderful cities to live in. It's one of the most attractive places to visit. It's a beautiful, wonderful city, and the whole Bay Area is. These workers know that worker strength, worker power, union power is a good thing. And they know that they're going to get the solidarity of everybody who works for living in the Bay Area because everybody understands it. And there is a rich and clear history. I compare that, and I don't mean to be obnoxious, I compare that to the 1934 textile strike where hundreds of workers were murdered across South Carolina, Georgia, North Carolina, at the same time that there was a general strike in San Francisco. And workers in Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina never recovered from it. And in fact, the victory that was won in San Francisco has been sustained over the years until now. And I'm quite confident these workers in San Francisco will win this fight because they're going to get significant solidarity, not only from the other unions, but I'll bet you they get significant solidarity from political leaders as well in the Patriot.
Yeah, I think it'll be a huge victory for labor, unions, and the American worker in general, because whether you're in unions are not in a union. Unions have the benefits of all workers in mind. When they're fighting for union benefits, they're not just fighting for the workers at their union. They're fighting for all workers, you know, whether it be employer contributions to health care, pay. I mean, you name it. Unions have always fought for the benefit of all American workers, not just workers under a union.
That's exactly right, and that's an important thing to keep in mind. We wouldn't have a minimum wage without union. We wouldn't have Social Security without union. We wouldn't have Medicaid or Medicare without union. And we wouldn't have the Civil Rights Act of 1964 without unions. We wouldn't have the Voting Rights Act of 1965 without unions. And unions are going to have to be part of the engine that brings back the Voting Rights Act to protect workers, and particularly in the old Confederacy. We've seen what governors like Nikki Haley will do to disenfranchise voters of color, young voters, and our elders. And I know I'm beating a drum that beat pretty hard last week, one of the first things that comes to mind is the Voting Rights Act of 1965 and what unions are going to have to do to get Congress to rewrite the Voting Rights Act so it will bend itself to this right-wing force that is determined to turn the first democracy in the world into an oligarchy. And that is really the big fight in front of us, saving democracy in America.
Yeah, and unions are playing a big role in the immigration reform debate. Unions have played a huge role. Stuart, as always, it's been a pleasure, and we're going to definitely keep following this strike. It's huge, over 2,000 workers, transit workers, on strike. It's a huge story that we're going to be covering over the next couple days, hopefully not that long. Hopefully the victory will be quicker, sooner rather than later. But as always, Stuart, thanks for coming on, and how can people learn more about the work that you're doing?
Well, thank you for asking. I'd ask everybody, all your listeners, to go to stuartacus.com. That's stuartacus.com. You know, I now have three books that are in print, that are published, and you can get those from my website, or you can go to Barnes & Noble, or you can go to Amazon. They're readily available anywhere and everywhere. You can get them in e-edition, electronic edition, for your Kindle or your, you know, whatever the appropriate companion to Kindle is. And when you get those, I'd also encourage you to surf the website and look at the blogs I've written. Spend a little time checking it out. You might find something that you think is very, very interesting. And we try to make literary art with political hard calls on the website. And we just really appreciate you to visit it.
Well, make sure to check that out for our listeners. And as always, Stuart, it's been a pleasure, and talk to you next week.
Thanks, David. Appreciate you very much, and I'll see you next week. And have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye.
And that's it for tonight's show. You can email the show at insidepolitics@yml.com, insidepolitics@yml.com. Until next time, I'm out.
With a beautiful wife, and you may ask yourself,